Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsom, and I'm here to break down UFC Mexico City, which goes down this weekend. We see three rematches within the entire card, including the main event and the co-main event. Of course, the main event, Brandon Moreno versus Brandon Royval 2. The co-main event, we've got Yair Rodriguez versus Brian Ortega 2 as well. And then the other rematch is the fire one that we'll talk about soon that I'm sure everybody is excited for. The theme for this event, and of course this podcast, is going to be the elevation in Mexico City, which is 2,240 meters, which also is equated to 7,350 feet. So it is going to be tough on the fighters. It is going to be interesting to see if the fighters have been in Mexico City a number of weeks before they fight, because of course, with that elevation, with fighting at the highest level, we're going to see cardio dumps, we're going to see a massive strain on every single fighter's gas tank, and it's going to be really interesting to see who's prepared and who's not. So yeah, elevation, definitely something to take into consideration, especially when you're placing your bets, playing bets at the bookies, because like I say, things are going to be a little bit different in regards to, you know, fighting a full three rounds if you need to. So definitely something to take into consideration. And talking about the bookies, talking about playing bets, just before we get into the breakdowns, if you are wanting to jump into the action this weekend, then look no further than MMAPlay365.com. We've got plenty for every single type of gambler, whether you're a fun gambler, you just want to play the parlays, accumulators, obviously depending on which country you're from, depends on whether you call it a parlay or an accumulator, but whether you're a long-term gambler and you just want to reinforce your own bets, maybe we've got a recommended bet section with full breakdowns. And then if you just want to play the long-term game, tailing myself as a handicapper, then there's official bet section there as well. And also included within the same package, you've got all the Bays AI UFC prediction software predictions for the event as well, including the top six, which the top six win only actually won last weekend. That was a six legger parlay, which would have paid out almost plus 650 if you'd have bet that as well. So everything that you could possibly need at MMAPlay365.com. It's all within one subscription. Just choose your length, next event, monthly subscription or annual subscription, and you're good to go. But right now, let's get into the breakdowns. And of course, as always, we start in that main event. The first rematch that we're going to be breaking down and talking about, we've got Brandon Moreno versus Brandon Royval 2. And it's always a fun time when it's Brandon Royval. You know what this dude brings to the table. He's high pace, he's intense, he crashes into the pocket. The striking's not too technical, but that's fine. As I always, always say, and cannot stress enough, the judges do not score technique. They score efficiency, they score a willingness to finish the fight. Brandon Royval does exactly that, crashes into the pocket because he's got no problem being taken down. His submission game is insane, crazy scrambles, crazy quick submission setups, and he is just a nightmare to deal with, a ball of energy inside the cage. But of course, you can shut him down, and we saw that last time out with Pantoja. Now, I do kind of feel, and again, I say this all the time as well, not just within MMA, but every professional athlete on the planet, no matter what sport you're a part of, can have a bad night, a bad game, a bad match, you know, obviously dependent on what sport you play, depends on what terminology you use, but every single athlete and within MMA can have a bad night, an off night. And I kind of feel that Royval had that a little bit against Pantoja. I bet Royval in that fight as an underdog, and I was a little bit disappointed. I could also argue the other side, though, that Pantoja had just completely leveled up and came in with a perfect game plan, which was just to take Royval down and smother him. Now, there's only a few fighters in this division, in my opinion, that can completely deal with Royval on the mat in regards to just being, you know, safe and not being put in too much trouble. And those two fighters are Pantoja and Brandon Moreno. Of course, Brandon Moreno last time out beat Brandon Royval, and I think that's why we're getting Royval as a plus 200 underdog here. Now, of course, Brandon Moreno, like I said, his jiu-jitsu is where his base is, but he's improved his striking along the way. And, you know, you saw what happened when Moreno fought Pantoja. Yes, Moreno lost his belt to Pantoja. I actually bet Pantoja as an underdog there as well to win the flyweight championship. But ultimately, it was a close fight. I do think Pantoja rightly won, but if it had gone the other way, I don't think there'd have been too many arguments or too many complaints. But Moreno and Pantoja seem to be the two, you know, the two best in the division, with Brandon Royval just behind them. Now, I think on any given night, Brandon Royval can beat either Pantoja and Moreno. Like, we saw Royval have some good moments against Pantoja late in the fight, showed good cardio, but I do feel he was more reserved earlier in the fight than he was later on, which is, again, a little bit unlike Royval. Royval normally starts fast, so maybe there was an element of, you know, a bit of a change from Royval, and then the off night came, but then Pantoja came in with a great game plan. I just think whatever happened on that night, the multiple combination of different things, I think just everything just clicked for Pantoja. I do expect to see a better Brandon Royval in this fight, but again, it's going to be tough because, look, Moreno's going to be the better technical striker. But Royval, again, it's like, does technique really matter when it comes with Royval because of how he crashes into the pocket? And the thing is with Moreno, although his jiu-jitsu is really good, I don't think he's got the wrestling that Pantoja's got. And of course, Moreno can wrestle. I'm not saying he can't. Of course he can. He's one of the best in the world. But he doesn't have that wrestling the same as what Pantoja had. So I don't know if Moreno's going to have the same success with that type of game plan, with the blueprint that Pantoja set out. I don't know whether he's going to be able to execute that type of fight against Royval as effective as what Pantoja did. And in fact, I think Royval's got decent wrestling. So I do think that the wrestling is very equal in this fight. You know, I don't think there's too much between it. I think from a striking perspective, yes, you've got the technical abilities of Moreno, but then you've got this crazy, unorthodox, wild side of Royval. And then when it comes to the grappling, again, the scrambles are going to be good. I don't think that Royval's going to have the same difficulties and deficiencies on the mat against Moreno as he did against Pantoja. So I'm willing to try and, you know, roll the dice with Brandon Royval one more time. I do think that this fight is now or never when it comes to potentially becoming a champion, because if Royval loses this fight after losing to Pantoja last time out and then losing to Moreno for a second time, I do think that it's going to be tough for Royval to ever potentially become a champion in the division. So I think it's now or never for Royval. I'm going to side with him one more time. I'd really like Royval. I have done ever since he came into the UFC. I've cashed him multiple times as an underdog. And just like Andre Feely a few weeks ago, you know, there's certain fighters that I do like as an underdog, but I definitely don't like as favourites. And Brandon Royval is one of them. And yeah, look, I think that I'm going to roll the dice with him one more time. I'm going to be picking Brandon Royval. I don't know whether I'm going to bet him yet, I'll be honest. But from a prediction and a pick perspective, I'm going to roll with him once more. I think he's still a nightmare fighter, a ball of energy. And I do think that on any given night, he's going to be able to beat anybody in the division. I'm thinking he's going to come in here really great, especially after last time out being a bit off. I'm picking Brandon Royval to win this fight. And in the next fight, the co-main event, another rematch. This is a really needed rematch, though, after what happened last time out. We've got Yair Rodriguez versus Brian Ortega 2. Now, what happened last time out is the fight didn't exit round one. It was a bit of a back and forth fight in regards to strikes. Ortega was landing decent volume, but Yair Rodriguez was landing those sniper shots. Brian Ortega tried to take Yair Rodriguez down a couple of times. Rodriguez defended the takedowns. Ortega did eventually get Rodriguez down. Rodriguez started to throw his legs up for a submission, started to try and hit an armbar. And as Brian Ortega ripped his arm out, yanked his arm out of the armbar so he didn't get submitted, dislocated his shoulder or tore a muscle in his shoulder, I think it was. And of course, from that moment, the fight was off. So what I actually love about this fight, though, is the previous fight was 5 rounds. That's what made that fight really great, because we got an extended version of a completely different stylistic clash type of fight, obviously with Rodriguez being the striker, Ortega being the grappler. And what the UFC have done is actually one of these rare 5-round non-title fight co-main events, and I think it's absolutely perfect. This is the type of fight that those 5-round non-title fight co-main events should be made for, because they were due to fight 5 rounds before, and that's what made that fight extra great. Like, the fight's good anyway, even at 3 rounds it was a good fight, but at 5 rounds there's definitely that extra spice to it. So yeah, great job from the UFC, and I do think this is a phenomenal fight. And as for how it plays out, like I say, you know, stylistically, there's a clash here. Yair Rodriguez is, you know, predominantly a striker, but he's a really slick grappler as well. Like, you can't sleep on the grappling. The wrestling's a little bit, you know, hit and miss, but, you know, he's not a wrestler, and, you know, he can wrestle. it's more from a defensive perspective that he tends to use it. But when the fights hit the mat, like, look at what he did against Ortega. Like, you can say it was a freak injury, and it was a freak injury what happened to Ortega, but it was caused by Yair Rodriguez. If Rodriguez had just laid on his back, both shoulders on the mat, and started to, you know, accept position and maybe try and work back up to his feet opposed to being aggressive and attacking off his back, then Ortega would have never have done that to his shoulder. It was only because Yair Rodriguez tried throwing his legs up and tried submitting and actually got close enough where Ortega panicked and yanked his arm out because he didn't want to get submitted. So you've got to give credit to Rodriguez from that perspective. Ortega, again, very similar, but the other way around, you know, predominantly a grappler, a legit BJJ black belt, submitted real high level guys, and he's a fighter that nobody really wants to hit the floor with. But he's also a fighter that over the years has developed his striking. It's more from a boxing perspective, the striking, even though he does use kicks, but, you know, the hands seem to be better than the kicks is what I'm trying to say, and he's become a decent boxer to go with his grappling. So both fighters are really well rounded at this point, but obviously it's still clear where either fighter is predominantly best, and the strength of either fighter is the weakness of the opponent. So it's a great fight. I just feel that with Yair Rodriguez, as long as the only thing that concerns me with Rodriguez is in those early moments in that previous fight, it did look like Ortega had a significant strength advantage. So once he'd eventually clinched up with Rodriguez, Rodriguez did seem to have a hard time breaking away and getting out of that. Now, for as long as the fight goes on, once we start hitting the third, fourth or fifth round, or if we hit those rounds, then there'll be less time spent in that clinch. I believe that Rodriguez won't get held in that type of position for, you know, multiple rounds, but it's still a little bit of a concern. Outside of that, we saw that Rodriguez was a sharp striker. He was landing nice strikes on Ortega to the point where Ortega felt like he had to clinch up and try and get the fight down to the mat. And then when Ortega did get the fight down to the mat, we saw that Rodriguez is no slouch. And I think that Rodriguez at this point is, like I say, just that, maybe that little bit better. And the other side of things that, again, you know, I spoke about this briefly last weekend with Volkanovski, and this is not a knock on any fighter, by the way. Like, the fighter, with how fighters' mentalities are, they are bulletproof. But every now and again, just like every human being, some fighters can have doubts and break a little bit from a mental perspective. And that's just normal. Everybody's human. It doesn't make them a bad fighter. But what is worth mentioning is the fact that, look, in this game, 50%, at least 50% of a fighter is the mental ability. And like I said, fighters are different breeds of human beings. If you've ever been around a fighter, or if you know a professional fighter, their mentality is just like no other. Like, it's completely bulletproof. So being a fighter, like I say, it's at least 50% mental. Like, you could be the best fighter in the world, have all the abilities and skills in the world, better than everybody else, but if you're not mentally checked in, then it doesn't matter what your skill set and ability is, because you're going to get beaten by somebody who is mentally checked in. Now, with Ortega, again, listening to an interview that he did, I can't remember the guy that he did the interview with, so I do apologize, but the interview was talking about how he's had multiple surgeries and he was laid in hospital wondering if it's all worth it anymore. You know, he wanted to, you know, be a sort of physically young father with his kids and not be 60 and, you know, not be able to do certain things. And, you know, he had all these, you know, sort of mental questions and wondering whether it's, you know, time to hang the gloves up and all these sort of things that have crossed his mind. And that's always a bit of a worry when it comes to, you know, again, a fighter's mental game. But obviously he's got himself into a fight here. He's going to enter the cage, so it can't be too bad. But again, there's just certain red flags that comes with hearing things like that from a fighter. And then the other side to it is, with that interview, the amount of surgeries that he's had, which he didn't open up on any of them apart from the shoulder, which we all knew about because the injury was very public. So there's been other surgeries that he hasn't told the public about, probably because he doesn't want an opponent maybe targeting certain areas. So there's a few things with Brian Ortega that I'm not quite liking for this fight. And also, he's been training in California, Los Angeles, so he's not been training at elevation. Going over to Mexico, how prepared is he going to be, especially with this being a five-round fight as well. So ultimately, with Rodriguez, I think he's definitely the better striker here. I think his grappling is better than the striking of Ortega. So stylistically, I like Rodriguez a little bit better. I also like the fact he's been training at elevation, whereas Brian Ortega hasn't. I also believe he's going to be more mentally checked in, and he's not the one coming off multiple surgeries as well. So I kind of feel like there's quite a bit of upside here on Yair Rodriguez. And for all those reasons, I'm picking Yair Rodriguez to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is going to be an explosive one, I believe. We've got a fight between two young guns, 24 years old versus 21 years old. We've got Daniel Zellhuber versus Francisco Prado. And like I said, this is going to be an explosive fight. Both fighters are at that age where they're going to be making huge strides from fight to fight in regards to development. Both fighters had rocky starts to the UFC as well. Zellhuber lost to Trey Ogden, a fight where I believe he was like a minus 350, minus 400 favourite. Francisco Prado came in on short notice against Jamie Malarkey and got dominated. Since then though, Zellhuber has gone on to, you know, beat Christos Yargos. He's beaten Lando Venata, two veterans in the UFC. Francisco Prado went on to knock out Zaitar in round one. So both fighters are coming into this fight high on confidence, really high on form as well. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Now, Prado, I think, is the slightly more well-rounded fighter. And when I say well-rounded, he'll just wrestle and grapple a little bit more or be less reluctant than Zellhuber to wrestle and grapple. But make no mistake about it, Francisco Prado loves to stand and bang. He's got heavy hands, and Zellhuber is a tall, long, technical striker, you know, really good boxing, good kicks as well. So it's going to be a fight where I think that the tall, long Zellhuber is going to be trying to strike from the outside and will try and slide in and out of range when it suits him. But Francisco Prado, I think Prado is going to be the fighter that's coming forwards, trying to be aggressive, trying to get into that pocket to land the hard shots. And if the hard shots aren't really there inside the pocket, or if Zellhuber's covering up well, then he can use the level change inside that boxing range to try and get the fight down to the mat. So stylistically, it's a really interesting fight. Obviously, you know, you look at the betting lines, and I do think that Zellhuber's a slightly wider favourite than what he should be. But with that being said, one thing that I go back to that I said is that, look, the development of both fighters is going to be very apparent from fight to fight, especially more so with Prado, because Prado's the 21-year-old, Zellhuber's the 24-year-old. But the bottom line is, these guys aren't going to hit the prime till they're like 29, 30, 31. So, like I said, when they get to that age, they're going to be completely different fighters. But the point that I'm trying to make is, you look at where these guys are training. I believe that Prado's still with the same team that he was pre-UFC. And then you look at Zellhuber, he made the move over to Extreme Couture. So, you know, he's training with, you know, a real mega gym where those developments from fight to fight are just going to be just that bit more rapid than Prado. Now, I do think that Zellhuber has trained in Mexico for this fight, but regardless, his home, his gym does seem to be Extreme Couture. You go into his Instagram and he's training there. So he's going to have some real good guys on a daily basis to help him develop between fights. So yeah, look, I don't think it's going to be like a huge edge to the point where this is the reason he's going to win and lose, but you know, it's definitely worth mentioning. As for, you know, how the fight plays out, I do think it's going to be a striking battle. I do think that either of these fighters can shut the other fighter's lights off very quickly. I kind of feel, though, that's more likely to be on the Prado side. He does seem to be more explosive, a little bit more powerful. But on the flip side of that, I think if Prado doesn't get Zellhuber out of there early, I think Zellhuber's the more technical fighter, is going to be able to set the pace in this fight. So he's going to be able to manage the pace, the range, and I think that's going to help him the longer the fight goes on. So I'm not saying, you know, it's Zellhuber gets knocked out early or he loses. And the reason that I'm not saying that is because I don't expect Prado to just go in there and knock Zellhuber out early. I really don't see that happening at all. Of course, there's always the possibility, and I do think there's going to be some scary moments for Zellhuber early in this fight. But I think if there is a storm, I think Zellhuber can weather it and then just take Prado down the stretch. And I think Prado, again, is going to be the fighter that mixes things up. I think he will try and attempt takedowns. I think he will look to get Zellhuber down to the mat at some point in this fight. But Zellhuber I do think that he's got decent takedown defense. And again, at Extreme Couture, which is a very wrestling-heavy gym, that's going to be improving from fight to fight. And if Prado is struggling to get Zellhuber down, then all he's going to be doing is expending energy at elevation in Mexico City. So again, I'm not sure that's the best path for Prado to go down. Ultimately, how I see the fight playing out, scary moments for Zellhuber early on, but I think Zellhuber, if there is a storm, can weather it, and then I think he can take Prado down the stretch where he can just show that he's the better technical striker, put volume together, look really good, look really technical, have people talking about him after the fight, and win. So for those reasons, I'm picking Daniel Zellhuber to win this fight. And next up, speaking of young fighters, 19 years old, we've got Raul Rosas Jr. versus Ricky Tercios. And I think that this has got all the makings of being a really fun fight, a really electric fight, an active fight. And if you watch the last two fights of Ricky Tercios, you'll probably tell me that I'm crazy for saying that, but I kind of feel that Raul Rosas Jr. is going to bring the best out of Tercios. Like Tercios, after the Brady Hiestand fight on the Ultimate Fighter finale, he looked like he was going to be this super exciting fighter that he's going to be an instant fan favourite. But then he goes out there and he loses, you know, a soft decision to Ayman Zahabi. And then he fights Kevin Natividad again. There wasn't a lot of action in the fight. And it was a split decision win that could have gone the other way. And now you're thinking, well, what Ricky Tercios are we actually going to see in the UFC? But the thing is with Raul Rosas Jr. is this dude, this kid just brings it, man. Like, yes, he had that loss to Christian Rodriguez. I think that was a loss that was going to come sooner or later, and it was just one of those stylistic clashes. Not stylistic clash, but Christian Rodriguez was just able to be very good and very effective in the areas that Rosas Jr. was good, and just be able to take Rosas Jr. down the stretch a little bit into deeper waters, deep waters that he'd never been before at this level, and then just be able to, you know, beat Rosas once he was tired and, you know, Rosas couldn't really be effective. And even tired, Raul Rosas Jr. still probably would have beaten a fighter that wasn't as efficient as Rodriguez within the wrestling and grappling. It's just Rodriguez was. But then since that fight, he came back, he knocked out Terrence Mitchell very early on. And now we're looking at Rosas Jr. as, look, he's took his loss in the UFC, a loss that he will look back on later in his career and think, man, I learned so much from that loss. He's got decent striking, knockout power. He's got a relentless wrestling game, good grappling as well. His cardio can hold up. Again, if you push back on the cardio a little bit, if you're fighting a fighter that has also got a good gas tank that can match your wrestling and grappling, then maybe that can drain the cardio a little bit more. Ricky Tercios, technically speaking, should be able to do that against Rosas Jr., but I'm not sure that, I just don't know what Ricky Tercios we're going to see, because his last two fights, like I say, have been a bit lackluster. But I kind of feel with how Raul Rosas Jr. pressures fighters, puts it on them early, looks to stand bang, but then level change into takedowns, be relentless, have crazy scrambles, I kind of feel like it's going to bring the best out of Ricky Tercios, and Tercios is actually going to be, I don't think he's going to do what Christian Rodriguez did, but I think he's going to get very close. And I kind of feel that the best way that I can explain this is, if Raul Rosas Jr. hadn't had lost against Christian Rodriguez, then this might be the fight that he would lose. But because he's taken that loss against Rodriguez, I genuinely think he's going to have learned a lot from that against a fighter that is decent defensively and offensively, where Rosas Jr. is good, and be able to match that pace as well. Because he's already felt that against Christian Rodriguez, I now think that this fight that he might have lost prior to the Rodriguez fight is a fight that he's going to win because of what he learned in the Rodriguez fight, if that makes sense. So I think that Raul Rosas Jr. is going to be great here. Mexico as well, he's going to love it. I think he's going to get takedowns. I think the scrambling is going to be fun, but I think he's going to get the better of Tercios, who, by the way, is a good grappler. But I just think it's going to be one of these real hard-earned fights where we actually see Rosas Jr.'s cardio being pushed. I think he's going to get tested again, but this is going to be the test that he overcomes and passes that he couldn't do prior. And again, I think that Rodriguez fight, the taking the loss there, is going to get him the win here. And for those reasons, I'm picking Raul Rosas Jr. to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Yasmin Haruge versus Sam Hughes. Now, it's one of these fights where, look, Haruge is a really good fighter. She's got really sharp striking, great boxing, great kicks. She can wrestle and grapple as well. She's a full package. And at 24 years old, again, she's one of these young fighters that is genuinely going to be developing very rapidly from fight to fight. But Sam Hughes, it's like, is it going to be one of these fights where we've got that minus 300, minus 350 women's MMA fight with, you know, the sharp fighter as, you know, the big favourite, and everyone's counting out the underdog, but then the underdog is really dog-like in regards to, you know, the style, the grit, the grind, you know, pushing through, fighting through bad spots. And that kind of describes Sam Hughes, and Sam Hughes has won fights in this exact situation where she's been a big underdog and just completely upset the public with the performance. And, you know, she's had those early moments where she looks like she's out of the fight or going to be out of the fight or on her way to lose, however you want to describe it. But then suddenly the opponent starts to, you know, decline a little bit in the fight and Sam Hughes becomes stronger. And then you see that dog-like performance from her. And look, she's been in these types of fights. So is it going to be another one of those? You know, you can't rule it out because we've seen it so many times before. But like I keep saying, look, at 24 years old, Haruge is already a sharp fighter. She's only going to be getting better. She's also coming off that loss against Denise Gomes. And just like I said with Raul Rosas Jr. in the previous breakdown, I kind of feel that she's not going to go back-to-back losses in this fight. I think that if she'd have not had that Gomes fight, would this be the fight that she gets caught out? Maybe, but I think coming off that Gomes loss, I think she's going to learn a lot from the loss. At this level in the UFC, I think she's going to come back stronger. I just don't see Haruge with the qualities that she's got as a fighter going back-to-back losses at this stage in her career. I do think that she's going to make the correct adjustments, the correct tweaks. And when you look at skill for skill here, Haruge is the better striker. Is she the better wrestler and grappler? You know, you can argue that, she might be, she might not be, but is Sam Hughes that much better than Haruge that she's going to be able to get the better of her wrestling and grappling? I don't think so. I think at worst it's even to the point where it kind of nullifies itself. I think the fight, for the most part, is going to take place on the feet. I think Sam Hughes is going to get touched up and hurt early. I think that if she gets past that, then we'll start to think, oh shit, is this happening again? Is Sam Hughes going to come back and, you know, beat Haruge after, you know, taking a bad first round? But Haruge doesn't slow down. She can be in firefights. I know Gomes finished her early in round one, but Haruge can be in firefights. I don't think Sam Hughes is that much of a finishing threat. And I think that Haruge could either get Sam Hughes out of there early or just really put volume on her, pressure, just hit her with a ton of shots and just, you know, piece Sam Hughes up through the majority of the fight. Maybe Sam Hughes takes a round somewhere along the line, but like I said, skill for skill, Haruge is the better fighter, in my opinion. Coming off that loss, she's going to make those correct adjustments and tweaks. And again, in a home country in Mexico, that gives the added spice there as well. And yeah, look, I know I've said it before, you know, earlier on, that we've seen this type of fight before where Sam Hughes produces that dog style performance, but I just don't think this is going to be one of them. And I know we've said that a million times before and been wrong before, but look, like I said, Haruge genuinely is a fighter that should be at the top of the division in the future. I'm not saying champion, but she's going to be in and around there in contention, I believe. And like I said, at 24 years old, she's not going to hit a peak for like another 4 or 5 years, so at least. So yeah, I think we're going to see a better version of Haruge. I don't think she goes back-to-back losses. I'm picking Yasmin Haruge to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is going to be fireworks. I think we've got Manuel Torres versus Chris Duncan. Now, I never thought that I would be referencing Andrei Arlovsky in a Chris Duncan breakdown, but here we go. I kind of feel that, look, Duncan was knocked out badly against Vyacheslav Borshev in the Contender Series. Then he was rocked ridiculously badly against Charlie Campbell again in the Contender Series a few fights after, but came back to eventually knock Campbell out really badly. So from that moment, it was a bit of a red flag, a bit of a concern with Chris Duncan and the durability. And you can't really blame anybody for, you know, having those concerns. They're always going to be in the back of your mind coming into the UFC from two Contender Series fights that have ended like that. So against Omar Morales. Now look, Omar Morales isn't like a super, you know, dangerous round one knockout artist, but regardless of what you think of Omar Morales, he hits fucking hard, and he was big for the division. And Chris Duncan looked fine against him. There was a moment, maybe a slight moment, where you're thinking, oh, is Duncan a little bit hurt, Rock wobbled, but he took those shots from Omar Morales fine, won that fight. Then he goes against Yanal Ashmuz. Now, Ashmuz is a very powerful striker, both with head kicks, both with his hands. We saw what he did against Patterson. So, again, I'm thinking to myself, well, look, Duncan passed the Omar Morales test. Is he going to get hit by Ashmuz and knocked out? And that was sort of, you know, the narrative that a lot of people were running with. And it was definitely in the back of my mind. But then he goes in against Ashmuz. He takes Ashmuz's shots as well. So now you're thinking, well, just like Andrei Arlovsky, because there was a time where Arlovsky was getting knocked out all the time. And then suddenly for the next like 3, 4, 5 years and 10 fights later, we're talking about how Arlovsky's got a glass chin, until suddenly you think, well, fuck no, he hasn't. Like, when was the last time Arlovsky got knocked out? I'm talking like a couple of years ago, by the way. So then you stopped really talking about Arlovsky with the durability issues. And I kind of feel Duncan's in the same light here. I'm not looking at Duncan with durability issues here. Do I think Duncan can get knocked out? Well, yes. Like, look at Manuel Torres. He hits hard. And this dude hasn't been out of round one, by the way, in his last 9 fights, spanning across 6 years since 2018. The fight before that was a split decision win. So, yes, Torres hits hard, and he could knock Chris Duncan out, but it's not as much as a concern as what I believe it would have been to me, at least, if this fight was a couple of fights ago. Now we've seen Duncan take some shots, and he's training at American Top Team, so he's got better level training partners around him during his camp. Obviously, American Top Team's the mega gym. You know, I'm not saying anything negative towards where he trains outside of Top Team, American Top Team, but, you know, the mega gym, he's got world-class superstars around him all the time, being able to get good work in. I know he's done a lot with Grant Dawson, who's a solid wrestler. That's brought his wrestling game on a little bit as well. But we saw against Ashmuz, and look, I know Ashmuz injured his hand or his arm mid-fight, but prior to that, Chris Duncan was looking fine striking. He looked like he'd levelled up his striking again, so he looks like an improving fighter. But like I said, you look at Manuel Torres, and the dude is a sniper, and he does it hard. The one issue that I've got with Torres is the level of competition, though, because, look, Frank Camacho was on his way out, and he got caught. He caught Frank Camacho, and, you know, Frank Camacho no longer with the UFC. I don't know if he is retired from MMA. I believe he might be. And then the fight after that, he knocks out Nicholas Mota with that short elbow. But again, it's like, how many times does he catch a fighter with that short elbow? You know, is it a low percentage KO that he landed there? But also on the flip side, I know Nicholas Mota had a good fight last time out, but prior to that, he wasn't looking very good either. So it's, with Manuel Torres, the level of competition, he's, in my opinion, now fighting somebody that isn't just going to get out there, really. You know, he's not, I don't believe that there's a high percentage chance that he's just going to put Chris Duncan out there, really. That means Torres is going to be stretched out of round one, which we haven't seen for 6 years across 9 fights. Torres is going to have to deal with somebody that is trying to wrestle and grapple as well. I know Chris Duncan's put something out there saying that, you know, he's in for a stand-up war. I think that's mind games, if I'm being honest. I think that Duncan might believe he's the better striker, but I do think that he's going to mix things up. I do think that he's going to, you know, look for takedowns, try and grind away a little bit like the Omar Morales fight. Because if he does that, he takes away all of Manuel Torres's game. Manuel Torres wants to keep this fight on the feet, at range, where he can strike, where he can set his own pace, set his own range, and strike out on the outside and move in and out of range as and when he chooses. So if Duncan actually level changes and just clinches up with him, threaten takedowns, look to chain wrestle, he's not only going to break the flow of Torres' striking, but he completely takes away the path to victory. And that's where I think that the stylistic advantages for Duncan. Duncan's striking, I think he might be able to be competitive with Torres, but if this is a 15-minute kickboxing fight, I don't really like Chris Duncan's chances too much, but it's not, it's MMA, and if he starts mixing in the wrestling takedowns, like I say, breaks the flow of Torres, takes away Torres's path to victory as well, and Chris Duncan, I believe, is going to be the best fighter that Torres has ever fought. So I do think the stylistic advantages for Duncan, although I do recognise that there is that danger of Torres landing that sniper shot and knocking Duncan out, and Duncan has been rocked and wobbled and knocked out before, so I completely get that side of it. But if this is stretched out of round one, then I think Duncan has got a legitimate path to victory to win this fight, could legitimately win it. And more often than not, those that follow my breakdowns every week, you know that I'm always going to side away from the guy that the biggest path to victory is that round one KO. So for those reasons, I'm picking Chris Duncan to win this fight. Next up, we've got Christian Quiñones versus Jaione Barcelos. And I think this is a really good fight. When I went into tape with this fight, I really wanted to come out betting Quiñones as the underdog, if I'm being honest. Because look, Barcelos is, you know, getting up there in age. You look at his wins, his last wins since 2020. So over the last 4 years have been Khalid Taha and Trevin Jones, none of which I believe are still in the UFC. So yeah, it's tough, especially like I said, you look at his 36 years old as well. However, you look at the fights that he's lost, Timur Valiyev, again, I've got no idea why the UFC didn't re-sign him. There must have been something going on with Timur Valiyev that the UFC didn't like, because he's absolutely a UFC caliber fighter, but it was a close fight, a majority decision. Then he lost against Victor Henry. That was the surprising one. But again, every fighter, I've said this a million times before, I've also said it on this podcast, every fighter, every athlete in the world has an off night, day, match, game, whatever it is. I kind of feel that was it for Jaione Barcelos, a fight where he was expected to win, which makes the loss look even worse. But then he lost against Umar Nurmagomedov, he lost against Kyla Phillips, both of them are decent fighters. So yeah, in this fight, I really wanted to like Quiñones, especially as the underdog, considering everything around him, surrounding Barcelos, which is what I've just explained. But man, like, you watch tape and Barcelos is still good. He's still good, even though he's losing against good guys, but he's still competitive at this age. He's still a powerful striker. He still mixes things up really well with his wrestling and grappling. The only reason that he couldn't really get the wrestling and grappling going against Kyla Phillips is because Kyla Phillips is a good wrestler himself and a legit BJJ black belt himself. Christian Quiñones has not got the wrestling and grappling of Kyla Phillips. I think that Christian Quiñones is dangerous, just like I said with Manuel Torres, with the sniper shots straight down the middle. I think Quiñones has got something as a fighter, but I just don't think that you can go and watch the fight that Quiñones had with Kang and then look at this fight with Barcelos and think that Barcelos can't do what Kang did, but just a million times better. And look, I know that Kang actually rocked Quiñones, and I kind of feel that Quiñones was maybe a little bit dazed still by the time he was submitted. But Barcelos is a level above Kang with wrestling and grappling, and also a better striker as well. So yeah, I'm having a really tough time seeing Christian Quiñones win this. I nearly said Rodriguez, and there's that many of them on the card. But I am having a hard time of looking at Quiñones and thinking, how does he win outside of just finding that knockout shot early against Barcelos and knocking him out? Which is a possibility. You know, you look at Umar Nurmagomedov, he knocked out Barcelos in round one, but I just, again, same as the Manuel Torres situation, I just don't usually side with a fighter that's got stylistic disadvantages but has got that round one KO upside. So again, I think that, you know, does Barcelos get knocked out in round one? I think he gets hit with maybe some hard shots and there's some questionable moments early on. But as soon as Barcelos starts wrestling and grappling, I think that's done for Quiñones, because I do think that that's where the biggest gap in skill is. I think that there's levels when it comes to Barcelos' wrestling and grappling compared to Christian Quiñones' wrestling and grappling. For those reasons, I'm picking Jaione Barcelos to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Jesus Aguilar versus Matheus Mendonça. And I'm not going to lie, I wanted to like Mendonça a lot more than what I did in this fight, even though he's sort of like a mid-moderate favourite. I don't really rate Jesus Aguilar very highly, if I'm being honest. Like, he's very short for the division. I think he's got the shortest reach out of all the male MMA fighters as well. So, you know, that definitely is a factor, and you can't deny that. And the guy is, yes, he's got pace, yes, he's got good energy, but he is more of a, you know, wing and overhand, land a knockout, which, by the way, that was a fucking explosive knockout last time out. Like, you can't take away that power from him. That's insane. So Aguilar, to me, again, there is a little bit more to him as a fighter, but to me, overall, ultimately, when you summon him up, it's an overhand right knockout or it's a guillotine. And I don't really like that, I'll be honest. Like, yes, he's got a bit of wrestling chops, but he makes a lot of mistakes as well. We saw that in his Contender Series fight. Like, just tripping and trying to reap the legs on the wrong side, sacrifice throws that ultimately just all of this just ends him up on his back with somebody on top of him, which is exactly what Mendonça will want. Like, if Aguilar makes those mistakes here, Mendonça will be gifted those top positions. Now, Mendonça, he's a bit of a weird one because after his UFC debut against Basharat, like, I don't think anybody really expected him to beat Basharat. Basharat's a solid fighter, both those Basharat brothers. I keep saying it time and time again. You know, they'll both be up there in the division. But with Mendonça, I didn't expect him to beat Basharat, but I was super impressed with the loss. Like, Mendonça looked competitive. He kept in there for a full three rounds. He didn't ever quit on himself, and he didn't make it easy for Basharat. And I think Basharat said after the fight that Mendonça was a lot better than he thought, and he hit super hard. So after that, you're thinking, okay, well, look, there's no shame in losing to Basharat, and Mendonça is a legit fighter. But then he goes in there last time out, and he's shooting like sloppy takedowns. He's not setting them up. He's wasting cardio and gas tank. You could see that, you know, hanging on those double leg takedowns, just trying to wait for that opportunity to take the opponent down. It's just no good. And if he does that in this fight at elevation, he's going to gas out real bad. So, yeah, like. And then he started going for all these leg locks. He started trying to roll for the legs, and it started to look a bit weird. And he's a minus 250 favourite in this fight, I think, as well. And eventually he just gets, you know, finished because he can't execute the takedown. So he then resorted to leg locks, and you're thinking, what is he doing? And this is after the Basharat fight where he looked decent. So, yeah, like, it's tough. But then you do look at Mendonça. I do think he is a better quality fighter than Aguilar. I think Aguilar is going to have a cardio advantage here, which might end up playing a part in the fight. Mendonça is going to be taller. He's going to be longer. Massive reach advantage as well. So he's got a lot of upside, Mendonça, in this fight. It's just, I just don't know if he's just going to shoot these sloppy takedowns and trying to hang on the takedowns and end up gassing himself out, and Aguilar just takes him out the longer the fight goes on. Like, it's a legit possibility. But when I look at pre-fight and how they match up, I think Mendonça is the better quality fighter, better striker, better wrestler, better grappler. And then he's got the physical advantages of height, reach, range, all that sort of stuff. So I do have to pick Matheus Mendonça to win this fight. But like I say, I do have my concerns at the same time. However, it could have just been one of them off nights for him. And we'll find out in this fight. Because if he goes out here and looks great against Aguilar, if we get the Mendonça in this fight that we got in the Basharat fight, he wins comfortably. And that's what I'm thinking that we see, even though we saw a completely different Mendonça last time out. So for those reasons, I'm picking Matheus Mendonça to win this fight. And next up is the final rematch that we're going to be talking about on the podcast. And this is the fire one that I think everybody's excited for. This might be the people's main event. We've got Edgar Chiraz versus Daniel Lacerda 2. And man, like, not only is this the second time that they're fighting, I think they've been scheduled to fight like 100 times. And, you know, one time one of them pulls out, then the other one pulls out, and then they get to both of them weighing in. But then one guy gets sick and then the fight is cancelled. I think it was on fight night, so it's just it's a real shame that this fight hasn't happened again. But of course, you go back to the first fight and it was one of those stoppages from the referee where the referee said that Daniel Lacerda was out unconscious from a submission, but he actually wasn't, so then they reverted it to a no contest. And that also happened in the fight with Ronnie Lawrence and Dan Argueta. I'll get there eventually. And funnily enough, I had money on both of those fights as well. I had money on Dan Argueta, who I believe was about to submit Ronnie Lawrence. Again, the referee pulled him off and said that he was out when he wasn't. And that ended up being a no contest when Argueta was looking great. But I kind of feel that I got paid back a little bit with that, because I do think that Chiraz would have finished Lacerda in that situation if the referee hadn't stopped it, saying that Lacerda was out. And again, money that I probably should have lost, in my opinion, I ended up getting back as a void bet from the no contest. So I kind of feel like I've seen both sides of this. But look, like, I've picked Lacerda to win on all the breakdowns I've made for these fights, and I'm not going to change my pick. You know, I do have slightly more concerns because Lacerda is now fighting at elevation. And although, you know, he has been here early in Mexico City, he is known to be a fighter that does tire out late in fights, comes in at 100 miles an hour and then tyres late, although he didn't do that against Chires. He did say that he was going to change things up. Like last time out, he was more patient against Chires and was actually looking okay until Chires attacked the submission, and then, you know, I've explained what happened after that. But Lacerda is a fighter that's known to tyre at elevation, probably more likely to tyre, but that doesn't matter for Lacerda. I kind of feel like Lacerda is a fighter that is always going to have his best opportunities to win a fight in round one. And if he doesn't, Chires tyres as well. He slows down. And again, this breakdown's the same as the other breakdowns. Like, Chires shouldn't be this big of a favourite. Should he be a favourite? Yes. Should he be this big of a favourite? No. Does he slow down just like Lacerda? Yes. Does he slow down as much as Lacerda? Maybe not. But if Lacerda paces himself, then he might be able to keep up that same pace as Chires down the stretch. I just feel like it's a really close fight against two fighters that are a little bit sketchy, that can look great in moments but then terrible in other moments, and two fighters that are just matched up to make this fight completely and utterly fun. There's a reason the UFC have A, rematched it, and B, tried to match it about five times since. So yeah, that tells you everything. I think this is going to be a barn burner. I think that Lacerda, even though they're at elevation, doesn't change too much for him because of his style and, you know, his path to victory. So I am going to stay on the side of Lacerda. Once again, for the 100th time, I'm picking Daniel Lacerda to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Claudio Puelles versus Fares Ziam. Now, I bet on Fares Ziam last time out. I got really good closing line value against Jai Herbert as well. Like, pretty sure I bet him at minus 125 and he closed up at close to minus 200. But I wasn't overly impressed with the performance, if I'm being honest. Like, I did expect him to be much sharper and, you know, mixing plenty of wrestling, and I just didn't get the performance that I wanted from Ziam. I probably got the minus 125 performance. I didn't, you know, he didn't look anywhere close to looking like he should have been up at like minus or close to minus 200. So I do have a bit of pause with Ziam. But on the other side, Claudio Puelles, he's a fighter that is excited himself, that will look to wrestle, and his grappling game is where his bread and butter is, especially the leg locks, the leg submissions, knee bars, heel hooks. He'll roll for legs and be really good with that. But the problem is he'll sell out for that as well. Like, if that's not working, then he's going to get beaten. And when it does, the thing is, though, it does work against a certain level of opponent. And, you know, it's not going to work against your Dan Hooker. Might work against the Fares Ziam. You know, Ziam isn't where Hooker is. But I just don't know. I just don't trust Puelles for the fact that he does go for takedowns, but Ziam is going to be tough to take down. He does have a decent get-up game, but he's Puelles rolling for these legs. Like, it's opportunistic. He might get one. He might be able to do it against Ziam. But if he doesn't, I just don't like how he sells out for them. And outside of the leg locks, and probably the grappling in general, to be fair, Fares Ziam is a much better fighter. Levels above him, striking. A sniper with straight punches, got power, he can wrestle as well. The wrestling's probably quite even here, but obviously once the fight hits the mat, that's where Puelles will start to look better. But if Ziam can just match that wrestling of Puelles, then the fight's not going to hit the mat anyway, unless Puelles, you know, Imanari rolls into a leg lock or something. But I just, like I say, when it comes to a pick and prediction, I just don't like siding with fighters that'll sell out that way. So yeah, for me, I think Ziam's the fighter that's, you know, on the rise, that's developing really well. And I do want to see a better performance here than I saw last time against Jai Herbert. But I think Jai Herbert, in hindsight, was probably a harder fight for Ziam than what Puelles is going to be here. So for those reasons, I'm picking Fares Ziam to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Luis Rodriguez versus Dennis Bondar. Now, Bondar's a weird one because I genuinely don't know, like, where his ceiling is. Like, he doesn't... There's moments where he looks okay, especially pre-UFC. He looks like he's got some good skills, some good abilities. But then there's moments in the UFC where he doesn't look that great. But then his two losses in the UFC have come in really weird, like, scenarios. Like that fight against Malcolm Gordon where he had that injury early on. And again, look, like I said with Yair Rodriguez and Ortega earlier on, you know, Malcolm Gordon caused that injury. So fair play to him with the way he was fighting. And then, obviously, that loss to Carlos Hernandez. where Hernandez should have actually got a finish in that fight, slammed him with like a second left, and, you know, there was a slight clash of heads as Bondar bounced up from the canvas, and, you know, it went to a technical decision where Hernandez had won on all three scorecards anyway, 30-27 on two of them, 29-28 on one of them. And look, Carlos Hernandez is an okay fighter, but again, I just don't think he's that great of a fighter, and if you're getting 30-27 by him, then... Again, I just struggle to place Bondar. Whereas with Luis Rodriguez, he's an aggressive fighter. His last loss was the Contender Series, but that was 4 years ago, and he's 24 now. So he fought on the Contender Series as a young 20-year-old. And in my opinion, it was a borderline robbery. I'm not going to go full robbery because it was relatively close in parts, but I for sure thought that Rodriguez won a bare minimum of two rounds. There was maybe three rounds that you could have scored it to Rodriguez, but he ended up losing. Went away 4 years later. He's coming back a completely different fighter. Switches stances really well. Power in his hands, good boxing. He's got really good jiu-jitsu. Like, it's going to be tough to keep him down. Tough to take him down, but yeah, he's a very well-rounded fighter, and you can see he's massively developed since that Contender Series fight. And the only thing that worries me with Rodriguez is his volume. He's quite low volume. So if a fighter, an opponent, is just putting more out there than him, then he's got every chance of, you know, potentially just falling away from the fight and the fight being pulled away by the opponent. The thing is with Bondar, with the way that Bondar fights, I kind of feel like he's going to draw volume out of Rodriguez, because one of the reasons Rodriguez is quite low volume is he's a very counter-striker type of fighter, so he'll try and draw an opponent in and counter them, which again, couple that with low volume, and that's like judge's nightmare. So it's definitely something that Rodriguez needs to look at. But with Bondar, he's very forward pressure, so he loves to come forward, and I kind of feel like the stylistic clash here is going to be within the striking, and it's going to pull a lot of strikes out of Rodriguez and keep him active. And then I feel like there's going to be a little bit of wrestling and grappling on both sides. I think both fighters will shoot for takedowns, but I think Rodriguez is the better grappler here. I'm not saying he's the better wrestler, but if Bondar takes him down, I think Rodriguez is fine. We'll be able to get back up. But if Rodriguez gets on top of Bondar, I think Bondar might get up maybe a couple of times. But if Rodriguez sticks to it, I think he shows he's the better grappler. But in regards to the striking, both fighters are going to get what they want here. I think that Rodriguez has got something about him. I think he's aggressive. He's powerful. I do think that he's a fighter that is still going to be developing massively from fight to fight. So we're going to see a better version of Rodriguez here than we've ever seen before. Bondar, I'm just really unsure with. And normally when I'm unsure with a fighter, it's more of a negative, because if I'm not seeing that he's great, then from a UFC level perspective, a UFC caliber perspective, if I'm not seeing that the fighter's great, then there's definitely something that I don't like, and that the fighter probably isn't a great UFC caliber fighter, if that makes sense. So yeah, I'm unsure where to place Bondar, but I do like Rodriguez. He's in Mexico as well. He's going to be fired up. UFC debut, really well-rounded, developing from fight to fight. So for all those reasons, I'm picking Luis Rodriguez to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got a fun one here, actually. We've got Victor Altamirano versus Felipe Dos Santos. Now, Felipe Dos Santos, for those that might not remember, he was the fighter that stepped in on short notice to fight Manel Kapp, a fighter, look, at the top of the division, and a fight that has launched Manel Kapp into talking about potential title fights. And again, like, you look at Felipe Dos Santos's performance there, short notice, big crowd, big opponent in regards to stature and ranking, and Dos Santos looked insane, like so good, striking on point, powerful, can eat a shot, will land combinations, he's got good wrestling, he's got good grappling, he's got good pace, he can fight for three rounds at a high pace, no problem at all. This dude looks exciting for the division, but because of the betting line, I actually came into this fight wanting to potentially bet on Victor Altamirano, who I think is around a +240 underdog. And again, like, the amount of times we've seen a fighter come into the UFC, have that fire performance where nobody expects it and then struggles to replicate that performance in the next fight. When you've watched this sport and the level of the UFC for so many years like I have, and you've seen it happen so many times, it's hard to ignore it. And Victor Altamirano, technically, if we get the fighter that we saw against Manel Kapp in Dos Santos, then yeah, you know, Victor Altamirano, we're thinking probably should be a huge underdog. But Victor Altamirano has been in the UFC a long time now. He's a decent striker, switches stances really well. He's got decent wrestling, decent grappling. Sure, he came up short against Tim Elliott. But look, Tim Elliott's going to be a nightmare for most fighters just because of that wrestling and grappling that he brings to the table. And he's just one of those fighters that will just keep coming forward. He's so awkward and so horrible to deal with, is Tim Elliott. So I don't really hold that against Altamirano too much. Look, like I say, if we get the Dos Santos we got against Karp, then Dos Santos puts Altamirano away, in my opinion, and looks phenomenal. But like I say, the amount of time... I mean, who remembers that time where Lando Venata came in on short notice against one of the best fighters in the world in Tony Ferguson at the time and drops Tony Ferguson in round one and everyone's like, holy shit, who's this guy? And then Lando Venata becomes a UFC vet after that, sure, but he never looks as good as that again. I just don't know. I think Felipe Dos Santos is... He's a fighter that you probably don't want money against just because of how good he looks. And you look at pre-UFC and he is that type of fighter. And that's why I kind of still am holding him to being this explosive fighter that's really well-rounded that we do see another great performance from. But again, it's hard to be truly confident in that considering that it's a trend that's happened for years. Yeah, I wanted to like Altamirano more in this fight, but like I said, you look at pre-UFC and you can genuinely see that Dos Santos is a very high-quality fighter, and I think we do see it again in this fight, but I do have some concerns at the same time. I'm picking Felipe Dos Santos to win this fight. And the final fight to break down, the first fight as it stands right now of the night, we've got Muhammad Naimov versus Eric Silva. And if this is the first fight of the night, this is a fight to kick off the card with because this has got explosive written all over it. Muhammad Naimov is 2-0 in the UFC. A short notice win up a weight class against Jamie Malarkey, knocked Jamie Malarkey out, and then the win against Nathaniel Wood. This dude's 2-0 in the UFC. With wins against Jamie Malarkey and Nathaniel Wood. Like, this is a serious fighter. He's a big underdog in both fights as well. And now he's a big favourite, as you can imagine. Eric Silva, on the other hand, though, is a ball of energy, super exciting. He's aggressive, comes forward, loves to land hard strikes, crashes into the pocket, a little bit like Brandon Royval in a way, because he'll crash into the pocket, not too bothered if he gets taken down, because he does have a decent grappling game. And he's very well-rounded in that respect. Explosive striker. Decent wrestling, very good grappling, and it's hard to really look at Eric Silva and not love the way that this dude fights. The problem is Naimov's more grounded in regards to he's not as hot and heavy, he's very calm, he's more relaxed, and he will look and see and watch things coming and then react to it in the right way in a solid technical manner, whereas Eric Silva will just throw all his cards onto the table and go nuts. I'm not quite sure that's going to be enough to beat Naimov in this fight, who's faced, let's be honest, levels above in regards to UFC competition in his opening two UFC fights. Like Jamie Malarkey and Nathaniel Wood, levels above Eric Silva. It's just Eric Silva's fun and exciting, and because of that, there is always that chance of that flash finish, but I don't think that happens in this fight. I think that Naimov's a good striker, he's got power himself, good wrestler, good topside control as well, and I think he's going to have enough to nullify that, you know, explosive energy, the explosive start that we're going to see from Eric Silva, drown him out and beat him. So for those reasons, I'm picking Muhammad Naimov to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. It's been a little bit longer, actually. I've enjoyed breaking these fights down. I think it's going to be a super fun fight night, a ton of fun fights. Really interested, again, with the elevation and who tires, who doesn't, who comes out on top because of that. So yeah, I'm really, really excited for the card this weekend. And like I mentioned in the introduction, if you want to jump into the action, then MMA Play 365 is the one-stop shop for everything that you need. UFC prediction software from Baze AI with our algorithms. Then you've got the handicapper advice as well. We don't split up those packages, so everything's in one package. Even if you want to spend a little bit less, we've got a dog of the week package where we give you the Baze AI best underdog or highest percentage underdog, should I say. My favourite underdog. It's $1.99. If both of the underdogs lose, we give you your money back anyway. So there's plenty to go at MMA Play 365 for you to enjoy the action, add a little bit of spice on fight night, and enjoy the card from top to bottom. MMAPlay365.com. Head over there. Aside from that, I'm Newsom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.